Be seated.
Delighted to have you with us today. Invite you to take your Bibles. We're going to spend our morning together in John chapter 14. And we'll be looking at the first few verses of the 14th chapter of the book of John. I was asked by Don Jenry to, how about doing a lesson on heaven? And I told him, well, actually, what I told him was to chastise him for not being here when I have delivered lessons on heaven. But I was kidding with him, and I told him that I would be happy to do that. I would imagine sometimes when we talk about heaven, and sometimes when we give other subjects, you may miss the fact that I'm actually talking about them because I may not say what's always been said. We sing a song. I'm satisfied with a cottage below, but up there, I want a mansion. And we misunderstand heaven. We misunderstand heaven because the only one of the apostles who saw heaven was forbidden to describe it. And that would have been the apostle Paul, where he saw things that it was not proper for humans to share. And so he was forbidden from sharing it. But we think about the book of Revelation when John was caught up into heaven and he saw things. But what did he see? What he saw was the throne of God and the picture of God on the throne in heaven and of Jesus coming back to heaven in order to be received and accepted by God. And that's what he saw. So many times when we go to describing heaven, we go to the last part of the book of Revelation. And there we find our description of heaven in that great city that is four square and has those streets of gold. But if we read closely those last few verses of the book of Revelation, we'll understand that this is the New Jerusalem coming down out of heaven. And this is a description of the bride of Christ. This is a description of the church. And it's talking about, from heaven's viewpoint, the way heaven views the church and its glory and its value and its beauty from the standpoint of the way God views those who belong to him. And I often think when we think about the streets of that last line, I think it's the last line, in the movie Back to the Future, where the last line is, and I'll kind of change it a little bit, streets where we're going, we don't need streets. And we have a picture of heaven almost as if it's a physical thing. And we miss the things that we ought to see about it. So where do we go to get a description of heaven? Well, the description Jesus wants us to have is in John chapter 14. And I'd like for us to begin reading there and take a look at what he has to tell us. And we're going to start in verse 1. Verse 1. Jesus will say to his apostles, this is at the Last Supper, just prior to his death, just prior to his resurrection and prior to his ascension into heaven. Do not let your heart be troubled. Do not let your heart be troubled. What does that mean? What is he actually saying to us? Do not let your heart be troubled. How do I control that? Because he is putting the responsibility of controlling my heart on me. But I thought controlling my heart was impossible for me. And it depended on the circumstances that surround me. But Jesus says, do not let your heart be troubled. But then at the same time, how can I avoid having a troubled heart? And didn't Jesus have a troubled heart? In the Garden of Gethsemane, was his heart not troubled? As he anticipated the death that he was about to suffer, the cup that he was about to drink, was his heart not troubled? Of course it was. And of course, we have times when our hearts are troubled. But there is a way to soothe it. And there is a way to give it comfort. And there is a way to ease its trouble. And Jesus tells us. So do not let your heart be troubled, but believe. Believe God and believe me. Believing God and believing Jesus is the way we control a troubled heart, the way we soothe it, the way we comfort it, the way we bring it back to where it ought to be. See, individuals who are so overwhelmed with trouble and they continue in that, to the point that they cannot be troubled or cannot be comforted, there's something wrong with what they're believing. There's something wrong with what they're listening to. There's something wrong with the information that they're giving to themselves. And so Jesus begins with these apostles knowing that while they may not be very troubled right now, before this night is over, they will be extremely troubled. And he says, do not let your heart be troubled. Believe God and believe me. Believe God with all of his promises. Believe God with all that he is capable of doing. Believe God with everything that is about him. Believe Jesus with all that he has done. And believe Jesus with every promise that he has made, that it will turn out exactly as he has said. So verse 1. And in order to get us to that belief, then Jesus takes us to the next statement that he makes. And he makes a promise. And in the promise, we begin to have heaven unfolded for us. In my Father's house. The word house comes from a Greek word that looks and sounds somewhat like our English word mansion. And when an old English translation was made, way back a long time ago, even prior to the King James translation, the individual who translated it used the English word mansion to translate this Greek word. But in his day and time, mansion did not mean what it means to us today. What it meant in his day and time was dwelling. The place where you dwell. Your dwelling place. And so Jesus is saying, in my Father's dwelling place, where my Father lives, where my Father dwells, there are many dwelling places, not many mansions. So if you were looking for a mansion estate in heaven, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I promise you when you get there, you will not be disappointed. And so here is heaven. So we've come to a passage to talk about heaven, where heaven, the word heaven, is not used. Where the word heaven is not to be found. But this is heaven. Heaven is where God lives. Heaven is where God is. Heaven is the dwelling place of God. in my Father's dwelling place. Can you imagine? The place where God dwells, the place where God lives. What would that be like? If I understand what God is like, and I understand what it would be like to live where He lives, then I begin to get a picture of heaven. Then I begin to understand heaven. Can you imagine such a place? A place where there is life and there is no death. Because He has life within Himself. And He is the creator and the giver of all life. And He is not dependent upon anything in order to live. He doesn't need food. He doesn't need water. He doesn't need air. He doesn't need a particular environment. He lives because He lives. And for me to live where He lives, without any need for a particular environment, just being where God is, it is a place of life. It is a place of living. More, much, much more than just existence. It is a place of life and living. It's a place of truth. No deception. No lying. Nothing that is undependable. Nothing that cannot be relied upon. It is a place of truth because it's where He dwells. It's the place of righteousness where all things that are done are right and just and as they ought to be because it's who He is. And in this place where He dwells, there is nothing but righteousness. God is love. And in the place where He dwells, there is love. Not just as a passing idea, not as something that comes and goes, but something that is constant. The nature of the place. Because it's who He is. It's what He's about. And in the place where He dwells, are all good things. To broaden your horizon and your understanding about God and what it is like, and then imagine what it is like to be in His presence constantly and to be in the place where He is, and you have heaven. And that's what it's like. Because it's the place where God dwells. And that's the way Jesus describes it. That's the way Jesus wanted His apostles and disciples to know it. The place where God is. Then He says this. In my Father's dwelling place, there are many dwelling places. Wow. We can't even fathom God. I sometimes wonder and think when the Bible will tell us that the earth is His footstool, then how big and how vast is the place where He is? And then I wonder and imagine if by earth, do you mean just this planet? Or do you mean our solar system? Or do you mean our universe? And if it is nothing more than the footstool for God's feet, think of the vastness. You can almost imagine Jesus chuckling when He thinks. There's plenty of room, guys. There's plenty of room for you. And there's plenty of room for everybody you can bring with you. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. And then He says this, and I go to prepare a place for you. What do you think of when you read that? And it all depends on if your picture of heaven is a physical place, much like we have here, or if you'll move away from the physical and let your mind be open to the real dwelling place of God. What kind of place did Jesus prepare for us? Is he there with his creative ability making a physical garden? Is he there with his creative ability making a house? Is he there with his creative ability making something physical? I don't think it's any of that. I go to prepare a place for you. I think he came to prepare a place for us. He came to prepare a place for us by coming to die on the cross. And now he's going to prepare a place for us to go as a human being, Jesus of Nazareth, to be accepted by God for the sins of the whole world, and to sit as a human God at the right hand of God's throne. And he's prepared a place for us at the right hand of God, because he became human like us and died for us, raised like we will be, and ascended to the throne of God, and now sitting at the right hand of the throne of God. Can you imagine what that's going to be like? The closest thing I can come to is this. Let me try to put it in a way that I think. Can you imagine when we all are raised from the dead and we all rise to heaven to meet Jesus in the air, and he takes us home to be with him? And he separates all of humanity on his right hand and on his left, and he turns to us on his right hand and he says, "Well done, good and faithful servants. Enter into the joys of your Father. Come live where God lives." And when we come into that place, the looks that I can almost imagine we would get from all of the other creatures of heaven. Gabriel, the angel who's existed since the time God created him. And he was there in the days of Abraham, and he was there in the days of Daniel, and he was there in the days of Mary and of Joseph, and he's still there. And we may feel a sense of being uncomfortable, being in the presence of people or creatures that we do not know. And we do not know how we'll be received, and we do not know how we'll be treated. I've never had this to happen to me, because every family reunion I've been to, I've been known. I was known before I knew. I was known by them before I knew them. But can you imagine going to a family reunion where you've never been before? And no one has ever seen you before. And I walk in, and everybody is looking at me like, "Who is this? And who is this person?" And I walk up, and I say, "I'm Dwayne Spivey." "Spivey? Who are your mom and dad?" "My dad was Ernie, and my mother was Ann."
"Oh, Dad Dwayne!"
And because of association with them, I'm instantly and completely accepted. And to go to heaven and to be tied with Jesus, when all of heaven's creatures and all spiritual beings honor me as they honor him, because I'm his bride, because I'm part of his body, And not to accept me is to refuse him. And to love him is to love me and to accept me on the same basis of accepting him. I'm going to prepare a place for you. And then he gives us this promise in verse 3. And if I'm going and prepare a place for you, I'm coming back. I'm coming back and I will receive you to myself. There will not be a dwelling place for you over here, separate and apart. You will be received to me. And he goes on a little further and he says, so that where I am, there you will be. The apostles will write about this and say we will see him as he is because we will be like him. We will be fellow heirs with him. We will be sons and daughters of God with him. We will be like him. And he will receive us to himself. That's heaven. You know the way. You know where I'm going. You know how to get there. Thomas said, Lord, we don't know where you're going. How can we know how to get there? And Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody comes to the Father unless he comes through me. There it is again. Same thing we started with, what we're going to end with. Nobody goes to heaven unless you go through Jesus. Nobody goes to the Father unless you go through Jesus. What is heaven? Where God lives. Where God is. And everything that is involved and being in the place where God is. Sometimes I'm overwhelmed by the freedom from boundaries. Can you imagine the freedom from gravity? Can you imagine the freedom from time? Can you imagine the freedom from fear of something hurting my life or taking it in the presence of the one who is life and who gives life? Can you imagine the fear being freed from the boundary of not being accepted and loved and wanted when I live in the presence of love? Can you imagine having any fear when I live in the presence of God? That's heaven. And so we'll go back to what Jesus said at the beginning. We believe God. And Jesus can really and truly say to us, don't let your heart be troubled. Remember God. Remember what he said. Remember his promises. Remember me. Remember what I've done. Remember where you're going. And remember who's already there. Are you on your way to the Father? You are if you're in Jesus. You are if you trust him. You are if you submit to him. If you've been baptized into Christ, do you need to come home to Christ? We offer you his invitation this morning as together we stand and as we sing.